Our patterns of care surveys of medical oncologists demonstrate that bevacizumab plus chemotherapy has quickly become standard of care in the first-line metastatic colorectal cancer setting. I met with Dr. Paulo Huff to learn about an MD Anderson study evaluating an irinotecan bevacizumab combination, both for clinical effects and laboratory correlative studies.
The use of IFL with bevacizumab was shown to be better than IFL alone. However, IFL is a regimen that's not being used as much as it used to be. We consider it more toxic and less efficacious than FOLFIRI. And really, we saw that there was a need for some experience with FOLFIRI plus bevacizumab. We do not have a trial that we can quote on what's the efficacy or what's the benefit of adding bevacizumab to FOLFIRI. So we decided MD Anderson to conduct this phase 2 trial in which we took FOLFIRI and added bevacizumab to it and added a lot of correlative studies. So those patients, not only they would do the clinical trial, but also we are collecting blood for proteomic analysis, and we are doing DCE MRIs to look at blood flow and changes in blood flow with bevacizumab alone or bevacizumab with FOLFIRI. And the trial has an interesting design because to allow for this correlative studies to be done, the first cycle, patients receive only bevacizumab. And then after 2 weeks, they start with FOLFIRI plus bevacizumab. In fact, we call that day minus 14 when they get bevacizumab alone. But this allows us to have information from blood and imaging of the use of bevacizumab alone in combination with FOLFIRI. So
that's kind of like what Chris Willett did with the rectal cancer.
Pretty much. And, you know, it's something that I think allows us to learn a lot of the interaction of the drugs and what happens within the tumor. So we started this trial. We have a crew about half of the patients that will need to complete the trial. And out of the first patients that have been treated, we have reached a response rate of 70%, which for us, it's very good. And
how many patients?
This is a result of 20 patients that have been evaluated so far. And with these patients, we also noticed a very good safety profile. We have not encountered any problems with, you know, severe diarrhea. We do have diarrhea because of the use of irinotecan, of course, but it has been relatively straightforward to control. We have seen the expected incidence of neutropenia, but the percentages of grade 3 and 4 toxicities have been in line with what have been reported with the use of FOLFIRI before, so it seems that adding bevacizumab has not increased tremendously the toxicity, but it has indeed increased the efficacy of the regimen. Now, the primary endpoint for the trial is really progression-free survival. We felt that this would be a more appropriate endpoint, although we're following the response rate. And this trial has been open for more than a year now, and we still do not have a median progression-free survival because the patients are staying a long time. I can tell you that we do hope to achieve a progression-free survival that will be significantly longer than what we were used to see with FOLFIRI alone.
What about the correlative studies, particularly the blood flow?
We are collecting this data, but we are not analyzing it yet. So those patients have the DCE MRI studies, and this is being filed, if you will. The data is being stored. And we're collecting blood because we hope to have blood for analysis prior to treatment, then after bevacizumab alone, then after bevacizumab with FOLFIRI, and we are collecting blood every single visit, so we will have blood that will allow us to correlate what's going on when the patients have a response and when they progress. So we have a tremendous amount of material that we are collecting, but we decided that we would look into this all together once we finish the trial.
In terms of blood flow, do you have any sort of anecdotal observations?
We have had some. Our colleagues in the radiology division at MD Anderson have been working with us, seem to think that the use of bevacizumab may result in some particular characteristics in the tumor, changes in the way the tumor shows up in the MRI, maybe on CT scans. I cannot go too much into this right now because we are planning to look into this with greater detail. But it does seem that there are some specific changes that may be associated with the use of bevacizumab.
Any reason to think that it's normalizing the blood flow or increasing the blood flow?
That's the theory that obviously has been raised for quite some time now, and we do hope that it's part of the way bevacizumab works by improving the blood flow within the tumor and allowing the chemotherapy agents that are circulating in the blood to get into the tumor and kill the cells that would otherwise not be exposed to the chemotherapy agent. And the idea is that this would be done by normalizing the blood pressure within the tumor. So if you have better blood vessels within the tumor, you have less pressure, more blood flow, more chemotherapy arrives into the tumor cells and they die. Personally, I think that that's only part of the history. I think that it would be naive to think that that's the only way bevacizumab or other anti-VEGF therapies work, but I do think that this is part of it.
Does your data seem to sync up with that, or it's too early?
It's too early. We haven't really analyzed to know. I can tell you that we're looking into ways of trying to see how much of the impact of bevacizumab is due to this mechanism. But as you might imagine, when we're talking about analyzing chemotherapy flow within patients, it becomes a very difficult task. But we're trying to find ways of doing that.
What have you seen with the bevacizumab by itself?
With bevacizumab by itself, one, it has been very well tolerated because the patients are not getting chemotherapy. It's going to be interesting to see if there will be changes on the DCE MRIs or not. As I said, unfortunately or fortunately, we decided not to look into this right now. We'll do that in the end of this study.
What are the practical clinical implications of this study?
Right now, I think one of the practical implications is that if our results are maintained with this high response rate and prolonged progression-free survival with acceptable toxicity, it would be an indication that the use of FOLFIRI plus bevacizumab is a very good option in frontline. We do know that there are other options out there that are very good as well. The use of FOLFOX plus bevacizumab is interesting and probably the most commonly used combination in the United States at this time. But I think there is space for other good combinations. This would be one of them. One important point in favor of the FOLFIRI plus bevacizumab is that we do not encounter a cumulative toxicity that will make patients have to change therapy after a set number of cycles. Of course, with FOLFIRI, we do have fatigue and we do have the neutropenia, but once the patients get into a dose that their organism are used to, I think that they can tolerate this regimen for quite some time. Which reminds me, there is one important point. We have seen late responses with this combination. We are, of course, used to seeing responses to be maximized around 2 months after we start chemotherapy. Well, in this particular trial, a lot of the official responses, responses that reach the RECIST criteria, were actually seen later. And our median time to response in this trial is 18 weeks, which is more than 4 months. And this is very encouraging because I think that this is due to the impact of bevacizumab and perhaps long-term benefits will continue to be seen, you know, on those patients who are on treatment.
Right now, off protocol, I'm sure you're trying to put all your patients on study. For whatever reason, they're not eligible. In general, what tends to be your first-line therapy for metastatic disease in a patient who's chemotherapy naive?
I'm tailoring more my therapy for individual patients. I discuss with them. I have to say that my two commonly used regimens right now are FOLFIRI or FOLFOX with bevacizumab, provided patients have no contraindications to the use of the bevacizumab or any of the other agents. If I have a patient who has a disease that, in my opinion, may become operable within a relatively short period of time, I very often use FOLFOX plus bevacizumab. Patients in which I expect the treatment to be necessary for a longer period of time, I have used FOLFIRI plus bevacizumab quite often. But I have to say that I think that the use of FOLFOX or FOLFIRI is really a decision that has to be made based on physician comfort with the regimens because the efficacy between the two combinations is very, very similar.
What about Xaliri or CAPOX?
I think Xaliri and CAPOX are very good options. We have less experience with the use of Xaliri or Xelox or CAPOX with bevacizumab here in the United States. I think the way the bevacizumab was approved kind of directed us into using more combinations using infusion or 5-FU than the capecitabine, which is an excellent agent. And I do think that the use of capecitabine is a very viable option. We have patients who are now being treated with Xelox or CAPOX with bevacizumab. And it's hard to say because this is just personal experience. It's not a randomized trial, but the results have been very similar to what we would expect to see with FOLFOX plus bevacizumab. So I think that, particularly with Xelox, in which we have more experience from other centers doing the combination with bevacizumab, I feel very comfortable with.
What about the patient who, let's say you use FOLFOX and bevacizumab, they have a great response. Eventually they get to a point where you stop the oxali because of neurotoxicity, continue with 5-FU bevacizumab, and they finally progress at 18 months.
What to do with those patients? This is a very important question because, as we talked before, FOLFOX or Zelox with bevacizumab is probably the most commonly used regimen in the United States, and we do know that those patients do not progress within the first few months. The majority will be still getting benefit from the treatment when they develop too much neuropathy to be able to continue with oxaliplatin. And we have very often stopped oxaliplatin, continue with the fluoropyrimidine plus the bevacizumab. Now, those patients eventually will progress, although some patients derive great benefit for long periods of time just from the fluoropyrimidine and bevacizumab. And the question comes what to do at that point. And there are two ways that this issue can be approached. Those patients who had rapid recovery from the peripheral neuropathy from oxaliplatin could be re-exposed to a combination with oxaliplatin, following more or less the OptimOx design that has been recently published by the group from Dr. Degramont.
About continuing the bevacizumab?
Well, if you're going to reintroduce the oxaliplatin, I think that that's one option, although we do not know about the benefit of continuing the bevacizumab, particularly in this situation. But since the patients were previously responding to a combination with oxaliplatin bevacizumab, I think that it will be reasonable to continue in this particular situation. However, for those patients who still have significant peripheral neuropathy and for whom reintroduction of oxaliplatin would not be reasonable, then I tend to switch them completely and switch them to an irinotecan-based regimen. And usually I do not continue bevacizumab in that situation.
Can you talk a little bit about the retrospective analysis that was conducted at MD Anderson on patients who received bevacizumab after it was approved?
We encourage one of our fellows to go back and look at those patients. And then after getting IRB approval, we actually end up with a group of fellows doing kind of a joint effort in looking at the first cohort of patients who were treated at MD Anderson with bevacizumab once the drug was approved. So we have a group of patients who received bevacizumab in first and second line, and those patients have received both FOLFOX and FOLFIRI or similar regimens. And we learned a couple of interesting things looking at those patients. First is that the toxicity profile for those patients receiving FOLFOX or FOLFIRI with bevacizumab is very similar. You do have the small differences as expected with a little bit more alopecia with FOLFIRI than FOLFOX, more peripheral neuropathy with FOLFOX than FOLFIRI. But it does not seem that the bevacizumab-related side effects are any different when you use one regimen than the other. The second thing is that the response rate for both regimens was very similar and close to 70% for both. So showing that the results that we're achieving with our phase 2 on a more selected patient population is not that different than what we see on a more representative population, if you will, including outpatients that were treated. This is certainly a retrospective study, so it needs to be taken with a grain of salt, the results in the response rate, but they were very good as well.
How many patients?
About 100 patients. Close to 100 patients were analyzed. The final thing that we thought was interesting to look at was the impact of having the primary tumor in place. Because as you know, there is some concern that if patients with metastatic colorectal cancer were to receive their bevacizumab with a primary tumor in place, they would have a higher chance of a tumor perforation. And we do not know yet if this is a fact or not. Now, with the limitations of a small, relatively small population, but not that small, we decided to look into this. And about two-thirds of our patients had had the primary removed and one-third did not. So we grouped them together and decided to look at the risk of perforation, and we did not see any significant difference between the two groups. Now, you could argue that with less than 100 patients, it would be hard to see a difference, but at least we can say that if there is a difference, it's not a striking one, and it seems that patients with primary in place can be treated with bevacizumab relatively safely, not having a tremendously increased risk of bowel perforation. Of course, we hope that future trials that look at this prospectively will confirm or not this observation.
How many actual cases of bowel perforation did you have?
In this group, we had two, which is surprising because it turns out to be about 2%, which is exactly what have been reported in the other trials.
At this point, you know, sort of looking back at your experience as well as what's been reported in literature, what's your take on what's going on with these bowel perforations?
It's hard. I think we're all guessing, and we do not have really a good answer for this question. However, I do think that bevacizumab has been already demonstrated, does have an impact on healing, and our bowel is something that's very active. I mean, the mucosa is exchanging cells all the time, and we do have, I think, a very active environment, if you will. And I think that a small injuries that may happen to the bowel that would otherwise be healed may end up resulting to a perforation. I wish I knew more, and I think that we have to look more into this. One of the ideas is that we should probably be looking more into pathologist specimens from patients who had bowel perforation and had that area resected. You know, I'm not familiar with anybody looking into those specimens and trying to find out what happened at the tissue level. I don't know if that's going to bring the answer, but it's a logical next step, and I think those things will need to be done.
One of the common questions about bevacizumab relates to the safety of doing surgery and what the time interval is. And Lee Ellis from your place has talked a lot about that and written about that. In your 100 patients, did you have patients who went to surgery? Did you see complications?
We did have patients who went to surgery, and I have to point out that since the beginning, we have been very aware that bevacizumab could cause changes in the healing process. So we never take patients to surgery electively if they have received the bevacizumab within 6 weeks. So we always wait 6 to 8 weeks right now, which could be an overkill or could be too little. We don't know. But that's the number that we right now feel relatively comfortable with. And we do not restart bevacizumab until approximately a month after the surgical procedure. And this is based on the very small data that came out from the Hurwitz experience in the randomized trial with IFL and bevacizumab. So we were not able to find in this small number of patients who had procedures any significant increase, but we were respecting those boundaries. Now, I think that's another very important point that will need to be investigated in the future, because we may be waiting too long or we may be waiting too little, and we need to really look into this with greater care and find out exactly how long should we be waiting.
Can you update us on the AVANT trial and also talk a little bit about what that study is?
Yeah, sure. The AVANT trial is, in my opinion, one of the most important trials ongoing right now. It's a trial for patients who have high-risk stage 2 or stage 3 colon cancer. And in this trial, those patients, after surgery, they are randomized to receive FOLFOX, which is considered pretty much the standard of care for those patients right now, and they receive FOLFOX for 6 months with the usual FOLFOX 4 schedule. There are two experimental arms in this trial. The first one, patients receive FOLFOX 4 plus bevacizumab. They receive this combination for 6 months, and then they receive 6 more months of bevacizumab by itself. The third arm uses Zelox or capecitabine and oxaliplatin plus the bevacizumab for 6 months, followed by 6 months of bevacizumab. This is a very large trial. The objective is to include 3,450 patients, and the idea is to, one, discover if the addition of bevacizumab adds to the benefit of the use of an oxaliplatin and fluoropyrimidine regimen in the setting, and second, to see if we can use Zelox instead of FOLFOX. There are some significant advantages in convenience, but also I remind you that if we do Zelox, the cumulative dose of the oxaliplatin may be slightly less than doing 12 cycles of FOLFOX, because you only do 8 cycles with the Zelox. So there are some potential advantages, and of course this will need to be seen in the future. The trial is accruing really well. It has accrued more than half of the patients that will be needed for the final analysis, and we actually believe that the trial will be finished ahead of schedule.
And you and Amy DeGrimont are running the study, correct?
That's correct.
What fraction of patients are coming from the U.S.?
Well, in the U.S., we have two competing trials. There is the NSABP C08, which is very similar. In this trial, patients receive the modified FOLFOX6 regimen with or without bevacizumab. Bevacizumab is also given in the experimental arm for 6 months with chemo and then 6 months by itself. So very similar trial. The second trial that's ongoing in the United States is the Intergroup 0147 trial, which has been recently modified. And this trial, which is led by Dr. Alberts from Mayo Clinic, takes patients with stage 3 disease and assigns them to receive either the FOLFOX regimen or FOLFOX plus cetuximab. So in the United States, there is more competition for those patients, and the accrual is significantly less than it is around the world. But when the trial was planned, this was already discussed, and we knew that most of the patients would not come from the U.S. for the AVANT trial, exactly because there were two competing trials that would be happening here. And they're complementary, because I think that if we have a good result with the AVANT, it will be important to see if the NSABP CO8 confirms the findings or not.
Now, why was the decision made to just give 8 cycles of Zelox?
That's 6 months of therapy. And the idea was to continue to do the same regimens that we have experienced before. When we look back at the EXACT trial, it was 8 cycles of capecitabine versus the Roswell Park regimen. When you look at the Zelox trial in the adjuvant setting, it's 8 cycles, which end up being the 6 months that we have come to accept as necessary for those patients. One could argue that perhaps 6 months is too much. We do have the British trial, in which 3 months of infusion of 5-FU was similar to 6 months of 5-FU leucovorin. But right now, I think the worldwide feeling is that until we have further data, 6 months should be considered our standard.
What was your take on the NSABP C07 study that looked at FLOX?
Well, it was reassuring because the benefit, the decrease in the risk of recurrence for patients who received the FLOX was similar to that is obtained with the use of FOLFOX. And a little bit surprising, because when we see the use of bolus 5-FU leucovorin with oxaliplatin in the metastatic setting, at least when we look at the data from the 3-1 and 3-2 trial by Dr. Hoxter, it seems that these regimens are a little bit inferior to the FOLFOX or Zelox. But in the adjuvant setting, it seems that's an acceptable option. Personally, I tend to think that the use of FLOX would result in a little bit increase in the toxicity profile, but it's, to me, an acceptable option in the adjuvant setting right now.
What's going on at your institution in terms of clinical research in rectal cancer?
Right now, the clinical trial that's accruing patients in MD Anderson investigates the use of capecitabine with bevacizumab and radiation therapy preoperatively. Once the patients complete their preoperative regimen with capecitabine, Bev, radiation, they have a period of rest and they go to surgery. Now, postoperative treatment is given at discretion of the treating oncologist, because the primary endpoint is pathological response at the time of surgery.
And what are you seeing in terms of side effects with this regimen?
It's extremely well tolerated. We have been able to complete the treatment in the majority of patients, and I think it has been very well tolerated. I hope that the pathological response rate will be as high as expected.
How do you approach these patients off study?
Off study, we commonly use capecitabine plus radiation therapy in the preoperative setting, then surgery, and very commonly I do use the FOLFOX or Zelox in the adjuvant setting.